Episode 18 of By Our Own Hands. Will you please tell me another one of your tales? Sean asked, giving Mother a pleading look. I was surprised. Mother had sat with Sean and shared our tales. I was pleased. He was near and dear to me. He had become a part of me. Now my tales were to be his too. I waited for Mother to begin to tell our tale, my father's tale and his father's tale. The waves crashed onto the stones that the old woman had arranged. Isabella watched and waited for the waters to recede. The old woman returned and stood beside her. Once again, she walked to the stones and bent over them. 15 stones from Isabella and 16 from Maud. Two kings will offer life and death, she said. The waters began to recede. 16 stones from Isabella and 17 from Maud. A king and two queens will offer life that is death. They will offer a warmth that burns, and they will quench our thirst with a poisoned spring. All that follows will do the same, she said. The old woman turned to Isabella and continued her prophecy. 'Tis found not in the tyrants, but in the forsaken. We will all be forsaken until we deliver ourselves. We must do so by our own hands. That time will come once all that is an illusion is revealed to be an illusion, she said. What if we fail to deliver ourselves? Isabella asked. Then life will be death and death will be all. Do not fail to heed these words. The curse will soon be upon us, she said. Isabella watched the waters finish receding back to the sea. The miracle and the tragedy are ours to design, she heard the old woman say. Isabella turned to her, but she was gone. Her words came to pass more than 5 centuries later, at the time of Rory Dorrian. When Rory was in his mother's womb, she dreamt of a young man who battled a raging fire. He turned to her and aged before her eyes. She woke from the dream. The old woman sat at her bedside and spoke to her. He will be fire and a son of those forged in fire. He must know what is truly life and what is truly death. He must answer his call and not that of another. He must punish the wicked and not the innocent. If he succeeds, he will overcome the flames. If he does not, he will burn. Rory Dorrian was named for his ancestor who fled to Glenisheen, the Glen of Ashin. Glenisheen was nestled in the Ballyhora Mountains. It was at the foot of Suifin, the seat of Finn, in the land of Lumna, Limerick. The great mountain rises to almost 1,800 feet. It is so named because the summit contains a stone cairn. Some claim that it is the royal seat of Finn mac Cool, the legendary leader of the Fianna, the greatest of Ireland's warriors. His son was Oisin. Oisin's glen belonged to none, and it belonged to all. That is how it had always been. The great glen was, and always had been, Bully lands, the common grazing land of shepherds until the time of the great tyrant, Oliver Cromwell. The Roundheads had marched through Oisin's glen, but they had not stopped. People had fled to these lands as Rory's ancestors had. When the great tyrant died, some were able to return to their homes. Others were not so fortunate. Rory's ancestors, Hugh and Kiva, were among those who were forced to stay. One of the Roundheads had been granted lands near Oisin's glen. His name was Robert Oliver. He knew of the glen, and he had his suspicions. He visited once and spoke to Hugh. These lands do not belong to you, and they do not belong to me, he said. Hugh had nodded. I know of your priest, and I know of your rebels. I have no need for such troubles, he added. Hugh remained silent. Roman Catholic priests had been outlawed. Their village of a dozen cottages did hide a priest. He lived in Egan's cottage. Nicholas Egan had constructed a priest room to hide the priest. Other cottages hid men who had been outlawed by the Roundheads and refused a general pardon. "I have no need for such troubles," he repeated. "You will have no trouble if you leave us in peace," Hugh said. Robert Oliver nodded his agreement. He walked away, and Hugh never saw him again. Hugh learned that after the tyrant's death and the restoration of King Charles II, the same Robert Oliver had been granted even more land, and that grant did include Oisin's Glen. He never returned, and Oisin's Glen was left in peace. Hugh and Kiva's son was named Rory. He had a son named Hugh. Hugh named a son for his father, Rory. Each generation lived in peace and in fear. They lived with freedom, and yet they were in bondage. In a land of landlords and tenants, they were neither. Each of Robert Oliver's subsequent heirs had made themselves known, and then each had insisted that Oisin's Glen was unknown. Oisin's Glen continued to hide Roman Catholic priests and rebels. Over the years, this had not changed because the laws remained set against the Gael and the Roman Catholic. Charles II had tried to relax these laws, and he had failed. His Roman Catholic brother, James II, had tried, and he had lost his throne. It was taken by his daughter Mary and her husband, William of Orange. They had no desire to relax or abolish these laws. Ireland remained in bondage. Some were outlaws because they were priests. Some became outlaws for minor offenses under a system of justice that provided little justice. Others became outlaws for resisting the injustices they suffered. All were warriors of the Fianna. The Olivers feared Oisin's Glen. If they asserted their rights as landlords and the glen was discovered, they would have to answer to authorities. If they did not assert their rights, they could claim ignorance. The Oliver Castle was vast and the glen was remote and uncultivated. One could believe that such a place could be hidden and unbeknownst to a landlord. The inhabitants of the glen relied on the generosity of their neighbors. If those same neighbors ever believed the Olivers to be responsible for the discovery of the glen, the repercussions could last for years, or so they feared. Each generation of Olivers had agreed with their ancestor Robert and had said, "I have no need for such troubles." They had left the glen in peace, and the glen had not suffered any troubles. Oisin's Glen, with its outlaws of every kind, was both church and sanctuary. The inhabitants paid no rents. They did not pay the obligatory tithes to the established Protestant church. For all intents and purposes, they did not exist and were hidden to all who would object. In the time of Rory's father, a song was sung by many in the land of Luamna. In the year 1709, in came the brass-colored Palatine from the ancient banks of the Swabian Rhine. German Protestants from the Rhinish Palatine, fleeing French persecution, had been given sanctuary in England, and many were resettled in Ireland. Several hundred arrived in Rathkeel, 20 miles from Oisin's Glen. They desired the freedom to worship as they pleased. They were farmers. They worked diligently, and they prospered. 50 years later, their numbers had swelled, and they began to look for new lands to call their own. As a child, Rory had only glimpsed them from afar, but recently he had seen them up close, too close for him to ignore. One day he traveled to Ballyorgan's fair with his wife, Neve. She was an Egan, a descendant of Nicholas Egan. Nicholas's cottage still stood and was lived in by her brother. The Egan cottage was near their own. Ballyorgan was only 2 miles from Oisin's Glen. It was at the foot of Gooseberry Hill. The fair was held at an open field near the path that led to the village of Ardpatrick. It had been held for as long as Rory could remember, and his own father had taken him to the annual fair to buy, sell, and trade. Rory's father and mother had met at one of the annual fairs. Her father had objected to the match and had even locked her away in her family cottage. She escaped one night and ran all the way to Oisin's Glen, all the way to his father. They had married the following day. Her father was furious and repeatedly tried to steal her away. When at last he succeeded, she was torn from her husband and never seen again. A few years after she was taken away, Rory was brought to his father's door. He was left alone at the door to the cottage. His father recognized his own son immediately and embraced him. He raised Rory on his own and taught him all that he knew. Rory had chosen a woman from his own community. Niamh's ancestors had fled the Roundheads and had arrived at the same time as Hugh and Kiva. Their families had been delighted with the match. Niamh believed that they were the only people of their kind in the entire land that could claim to be free. She promised him that they would always be free, and she made him promise the same to her. She wanted to live and die in Oisin's Glen. On the day of the fair, Rory saw the Germans before he saw anything else. They had brought their cattle to sell and trade. They had brought grain and fodder. They wore heavy woolen clothing and black hats. Their clothes were plain and simple. It was not the first time Rory had seen Germans at an annual fair, but it was the first time that they had been so numerous. He knew that they couldn't have all walked from as far as Rath Keel. He approached one young man. He had a fine calf. The man could not have been more than 20. He tipped his hat to Rory, but he did not smile. He looked directly into Rory's eyes. "Good day," he said. "Good day," Rory said. "Have you taken an interest in my calf?" he asked. Rory stroked the calf. "You have traveled some distance to sell your calf," Rory replied. "No, I have not," he replied. Rory returned his stare. The man did not blink. "My family's farm is not far from here. It is just beyond that bend in the road," he added. Rory nodded. The man held his gaze for a moment. Rory remained silent. The man finally broke the silence. "Good day," he said. He moved away from Rory. Rory watched him. He turned away and saw an older man carefully watching him. The man's expression was dark. His features were very similar to the young man's. Rory stared at him for a moment before Niamh touched his arm. "They have come here, but they won't go to our glen," she said. "If they have settled here, then they will soon desire our glen," Rory said. "Our glen is wild and uncultivated. It is made of bog and rock. The soil is thin. It does not lend itself to farming. It would be an unforgiving place for a farmer," she said. "Come with me," he said. Rory and Niamh walked down the road that led to Ardpatrick. They walked to the bend in the road. A path led away from the road. Rory turned around and looked down the length of the road that he and Niamh had just traveled. He saw that the young man was following them. Rory and Niamh waited for him to reach them. Once he did, he looked down the path. "The path leads to my farm and the farms of several more of my people," he said. "It is harsh land," Rory said. "We will make it fruitful," he said. "When did you arrive?" Rory asked. "Last winter, we cleared and prepared the land before the spring planting," he said. Rory felt the man's eyes on him. He turned away from the path and returned the man's stare. "You're from Oisin's Glen?" he asked. Rory did not answer. He took Niamh by the arm and walked away. They did not return to the fair. They returned home and soon found themselves at the Egan cottage. Niamh's brother, William, opened the door to them. "We need to speak with the good father," Rory said. William opened the door widely. He smiled at Rory and Niamh, but his smile soon faded at the sight of their stern expressions. "You know this door is always open to you and my sister," he said. Rory and Niamh entered the cottage. Niamh and William seated themselves near the fire. Rory walked towards the side bedroom used for masses and found Father O'Keefe. He sat at a table and was placing items into a small box. He looked up at Rory. He immediately walked towards him and extended his hand. "Hello, Father," Rory said as they shook hands. "You are troubled, Rory," he said. "Yes, Father." The two sat for the next hour. They spoke of the Germans. They spoke of all that the Glen was to each of them. They spoke of hope and despair, life and death. When they had finished speaking, Father O'Keefe placed the small box that he had filled into Rory's hands. "This is a gift for you," he said. Rory had not even noticed the box. He looked at the contents. It contained papers, ink, and a pen. He remembered telling Father O'Keefe one of his tales, one of his father's tales, one of his father's tales. Father O'Keefe had responded by telling him to write down his tales. Now he had the tools to do so. Rory knew how to read and write. In every generation, one of the Glen cottages was occupied by a hedge teacher. Other hedge teachers from the region often sought refuge in that cottage. Laws forbade Roman Catholic schooling. All legal education was Protestant, and Roman Catholics could not attend Protestant schools. The only schooling available to Roman Catholics were the legal Scuola Scarte, hedge schools. These small schools often met in homes, but even more frequently outdoors in places where they could be easily hidden away. Those places were often hidden by hedges, which gave rise to the term hedge schools. "Do not trouble yourself. The Lord will show us the way," Father O'Keefe said. Rory thanked him and returned home to his cottage. Niamh did not speak to him that night. She did not wish to speak of that day. They remained in their cottage for a week because it rained heavily. He spent his time writing his tales. First, he wrote the tale of Hugh and Princess Aoife. Then he wrote the tale of Hugh and King Edward. He wrote each day and night. The rains were relentless. When the rains finally ceased, Rory emerged from his cottage. He walked towards the Egan cottage and saw movement out of the corner of his eye. He immediately looked in the direction of Sufian. He could see the great mountain clearly. He looked towards a path that led to the rock cairn on the summit of Sufian. He expected to see a deer emerge. He walked slowly towards the path. He reached the path and looked about. He turned and saw movement again. It was quick and dark. He ran towards the direction of the movement. He stopped when he saw the young man trying to conceal himself behind a tree. He turned around and walked back to his cottage. On reaching the cottage, he did not enter. Instead, he walked to the Egan cottage. He let himself in. William sat at the hearth with Father O'Keefe. "Good day, Rory," Father O'Keefe said, before glancing in Rory's direction. Rory did not want to mention the German. He did not fear the young man, but he did fear his desires. He knew that the entire community was speaking of the encroaching Germans, and the sighting of the young man would only upset them. They all feared the young man's desires. He wanted to speak to Father O'Keefe privately before mentioning the German to William. "Good morning, Father," he said. He reached for the door and began to close it. He saw movement again before he could close the door. He looked and saw that not far from the Egan cottage was a man. He was not the young German, and he was not one of their own. He was a stranger. He walked steadily towards the cottage. Rory closed the door and turned around quickly. "A stranger's coming," he said. They heard the sound of the hedge teacher's dog barking. Soon the sound of metal banging onto metal could be heard. Someone had started to beat a metal pot. It was their signal. Rory knew that men would soon begin to escape their cottages and run towards the path that led to Sue Finn. Father O'Keefe rapidly moved away from the hearth. He did not run into the mass room. Instead, he moved to the opposite side of the main room. He pulled on the ladder that led to the loft. He hurried into the loft. Rory listened for the sound of the wood panels moving. Once he heard them move and then move back into place, he knew that Father O'Keefe had safely hidden himself. The secret panels in the right side of the loft wall opened to a small space just large enough for Father O'Keefe to crouch down and hide himself. The space also led to a narrow passage. The passage, which was less than 2 feet wide, continued to the other side of the cottage and opened into a larger space above the room used for masses. This was the secret hiding place to be used by priests in times of trouble. It was the priest room. Most of the area above the room used for masses was a simple loft, the kind commonly found in many cottages. These lofts allowed for extra sleeping spaces. The loft at the Egan cottage had been carefully constructed to allow for an area of roughly 3 feet by 8 feet that was concealed above the room used for masses. The space was small, but Father O'Keefe could remain hidden for days if need be. Another passage to the priest room had been constructed on the side of the hearth. It was concealed by stonework, which caused the hearth to appear to be larger and wider than it truly was. Anyone viewing the hearth from inside the cottage would never know that a secret passage existed within the vast structure of the hearth. This passage could only be entered from the room used for masses through a concealed area on the other side of the hearth. Rory heard the knock on the cottage door. He made the sign of the cross and glanced at William before answering the door. William nodded. Rory opened the door and was greeted by an unimposing man of no more than 30 years of age. He was dressed in the clothes of a laborer, but he was also very neat and clean. His hat and boots were of a better quality than normally seen on a laborer. "I am John Smith. I have come to speak with Mr. Egan," he said. The man spoke with an English accent tinged with the local accent. He was clearly an Englishman that had lived in these parts for a considerable period of time. William approached the door. Rory stepped aside. William eyed the man suspiciously. "I am William Egan," he said. "May I please speak with you?" he asked. "What is your business?" William asked, not stepping aside or opening his door any further. "I have come on behalf of Mr. Oliver," he said. William stepped back and opened the door widely. "Please come in, sir," he said. John walked into the cottage and looked about. He was clearly relieved. Rory wondered just what John had expected to find. The men all walked towards a table and sat down. Rory did not speak. He would not until he had to, and he would not give his name unless he had to. That was the way of it. I am Mr. Silver Oliver's land agent, John began. William and Rory exchanged questioning looks. Yes, you heard right. His given name is Silver. It was his mother's surname, John added. John smiled. William and Rory remained silent. These lands you occupy are wild virgin lands. They have not been subdued by the yoke and the plow, he said. He paused before continuing. These lands should interest none that wish to farm, but some have inquired about them. Rory stiffened. He thought of Neve's words. He had wanted to believe her reassurances. He thought of the young German. He felt his anger burn inside of him. I am going to speak plainly to both of you, John said. He sighed deeply. He glanced at both Rory and William again before diverting his eyes and continuing. Your community has been hidden away in this glen since the days of Oliver Cromwell. You have chosen to remain hidden, and that has suited the Oliver family. Your community has been more valuable to the Oliver family as you currently are than you ever could have been as tenants. Do you understand? William nodded. I believe I understand you, he said. John did not look convinced by William's answer. He leaned forward and spoke in a whisper. Every papist and rebel in this country believes that the Oliver family protects this glen. That belief suits them very well, especially with the prevalence of certain rebels in this country, he added. He leaned back and sighed again. But now that some of the Germans have inquired after these lands, Mr. Oliver must change the current arrangement. He has sent me to offer you leases. John stood up and faintly smiled. Send one of your men around in a week's time, and we'll settle things up. Mr. Oliver is willing to offer rents at below the standard rate. You know where to find me. Good day, he said. He walked away and let himself out of the cottage. William and Rory did not say a word. They waited in silence for several minutes before William reached for a broom and used the handle to tap the ceiling near the secret space. He tapped it three times for the Holy Trinity. He waited and repeated the process twice more. After a minute, they heard Father O'Keefe above them. He descended from the loft. He spoke in a quiet and steady voice. I heard what the man came to say. We need every man to meet here tonight. Yes, Father, I will go around to the cottages and inform everyone, Rory said. Rory visited each cottage. He did not tell them why they were to meet at the mass room. None asked.